Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of our podcast, Is Breakfast Included? Let's get right into it today. On the show, we have John Taylor of Duran Duran. Of course, John Taylor is the bass player of Duran Duran. He's also an author, an actor, an artist, a producer. He's done it all. His list of accomplishments are far too many to mention in this intro. You can look him up and you can make some up if you'd like. I sat down with John a couple of days before his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. We talked a little bit about that. We talked about his music, his bass playing, his art, his book, on whether or not he's going to write another one. You're going to have to listen to find that out. It was a lot of fun. He was gracious enough to give me that time in a busy week that we had. On a personal note, I want to say I've worked for John for 12 years, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. He's taken me along for the ride. I've watched just about every Duran show since 2011. How do you like that? It was a lot of fun. It's been a great ride, and I hope it continues. We do talk about a few things in here, songs that they hadn't played, their big Halloween show. If you missed it, it'll probably never happen again. And he talks a little about the preparation he took for that show. Anyway, I don't want to give it all away. Just check it out.
Very painless. Not long.
Yeah, you keep saying that. It's sort of scary. You're not going to feel a thing. Oh!
But it's real easy, man. First, I just ask you to introduce yourself. We go from there. I ask questions or you ask questions. We talk. If there's anything you want to know about me that you don't know already.
Hi, I'm John Taylor, and I'm happy to be a guest on today's show.
Thanks a lot, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. We are 2 days away from the Hall of Fame induction, and, you know, it's all about staying cool. You know, it's just not getting caught up. There's a lot of, you know, there's politics, and, oh, I mean, it took us forever to agree on what we were going to play and the order that we were going to play it and the arrangement, but, you know, we got to that, and, you know, I think at this point, you know, it's okay. You know, there's still, you know, there's things coming at us that are, you know, that are challenging, but I'm kind of looking forward to, you know, it's like one of those things, you kind of look forward to it, but you also look forward to having it behind you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we've been really, I mean, you know, it's been a hell of a year for Duran Duran. And, you know, really since April, we've been kind of going at it. We've been in it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of looking forward to, I mean, it's funny because I look forward to having nothing to do, unquote, you know. And then like a few days in, I'm like, I'm a wreck, you know, I don't know what to do with myself, but right now I'm looking forward to having a few days of nothing to do.
Right on. Man, you guys released this album almost a year ago, and in that year, you know, we started back in September, we made our way through a couple of shows, hometown shows.
Yeah.
Came to Austin,
yeah.
Did Austin, you know, ACL, did yeah. a couple of shows in December. And like you said, we started in April. All of this happened at once. The ACL, we did a taping, the ACL Hall of Fame induction. Yeah. Do you think that was long overdue?
What, the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I you know, I don't think there's any timeline on that kind of thing. You can't have any expectations. I mean, we don't, you know, I mean, you just don't know. We've never really been a sort of industry darlings. So about, I think it's about 3 years ago now, Simon and I went to New York and we inducted Roxy Music into the Hall of Fame. And at the time it felt, when we went there for that, and there was a couple of the guys there that were saying, right, it's going to be you guys next, you know, we're going to, but I have to say, I mean, actually that was a real career highlight for me. I mean, that felt like real validation actually to be the ones that inducted them, you know, I mean, this is, you know, and it's funny because, you know, not all the band feel the same about it. You know, if it was up to Nick, we wouldn't have gone, You know, he's like, you know, but he's like, boys club, you know, should have been the New York Dolls, you know, but no, man, I mean, it's better in than out, you know, I mean, I think for the fans, it's great. You know, they really feel very validated by it. It's funny, you know, it's like growing up, you know, the early days of the band. Are they rock? Is it rock? You know, that was the big question at the beginning of the 80s. Is it rock or is it pop? You know, yeah. And I'll say one thing, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they're like the Catholic Church now. They're like, they'll take anyone. You know, as long as the seats are full, right. You know, it's like, no, you don't even have to believe in Jesus. Yeah. You know, you don't even have to have a drum kit. You can be in the Rock Hall.
You don't even have to have any hits, you know? So I want to ask you this, man. I've been around you for several years now, and every night I watch you play. Like, I didn't grow up as a fan of Duran Duran. When I came into your organization, it was then that I became a fan. And of course, like, the minute I did shows with you guys, I was like, oh, I know this song. But one thing about you that I noticed is that you still have this passion that I'm assuming you had when you guys hit the scene. Like, every night you leave it on the stage.
Mm.
You, I'm talking about you because you're the one that I deal with mostly. How is it hard to keep that passion, or is it just something that just, that you love to do still?
Well, it's ever evolving. I've always loved stage time. Mm-hmm. I mean, even before I thought I could be a musician, I would go to shows, and the best bit was when the lights went down. You know, you'd be hanging out in the lobby, you'd meet some friends, you'd buy a t-shirt, you know, you'd get your seats, is the seat good enough? And, you know, and maybe the opening act would do their thing, you know, and then everybody would be like, the excitement, and da-da-da-da-da, and he's checking your watch, and then the lights go down. Suddenly everybody's like, whoa, yeah. You know, you're as one. Yeah. And the musicians get to take over. They get to run the room for the next 2 hours or 60 minutes or whatever. And I just, you know, that became, that's what I love, you know, because it's just, it's like you don't have to say, for God's sake, shut up to anybody. You just say, house lights,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, and then it's, I guess it's probably what, you know, athletes, one of the things athletes enjoy, because it's just a pause on bullshit and everything, you know, because the show takes over. Uh-huh. And, I wasn't always, you know, I learned to play in the public eye, you know, I was limited to some extent as a performer in the early days because, you know, I was still learning how to play. If you look at early photos of me on stage, I've almost always got my head down, you know, looking at the fretboard, making sure I wasn't making any mistakes. And, I've just sort of grown up, you know, and actually this year I really, you know, as we've kind of, you know, moved up a level, you know, and we went to the Isle of Wight and, you know, ACL and playing on bigger stages with bigger crowds, you know, I've been more aware of, you know, the stamina, the energy that's required to put it across on that level. But, you know, the thing is, it all comes down to your fingers on the fretboard, you know, and having, and just feeling comfortable, feeling fluid. And so I've just got to make sure that, you know, I mean, I've made every mistake over the years. You know, I used to get blisters and blisters. And I mean, for years until I'm like, dude, if you don't start practicing, you're always going to get blisters, you know? So, I mean, I don't love to practice. I don't really, I mean, you know, I mean, I force myself. I mean, the last couple of weeks, well, you know, I was watching the Beatles documentary, like in 60-minute spurts, and that was my practice sessions. So I try to find an audiobook or something, you know. I mean, unless I'm learning new songs, like we were learning for the Halloween show, which was cool. But yeah, you've got to just keep, you know, It wasn't like, you know, we were musicians that went to music school and we were taught how to be musicians. You know, I mean, if you were a viola player, you know, and your intention was to, you know, to find a gig with, you know, the local orchestra, you know, you'd go to Juilliard or you'd go to a music school. And in those 3 years, they'd teach you how to be a musician for life, you know, and that hasn't been the case for us. We've had to figure it out as we go along. But, you know, at least for Duran and for the four of us, it just comes back to we're all kind of in it together and we're all kind of learning together. So nobody's really, it's not like I ever feel, oh, what an idiot, you know, why didn't I, you know, because I'm one of four idiots.
Yeah. Do you ever pass the buck to them? Along that lines, man, you guys have so many iconic songs. Is there a bass line that you could be having an off night and when that song hits in the set list, you're like, okay, this is where it is. It gets you excited. Like you look down and, you know, the one I was talking to a friend of mine named Gordon Keith. He's a radio personality in Dallas. And we spent probably about 15 minutes of the interview talking about your plan. And he was dissecting it. He's a huge fan and was, you know, and it came upon me like, I watch you every night. I watch your hands. I hear when you hit bad notes. Well, I know because you look over at me, you know.
Like it's your fault.
What'd you do this for? But is that there was a show in, I believe we did in Helsinki, when the rain just started coming down, yeah. You guys were playing Rio and you walked to the front of the stage. Of course, I was terrified because the bass is getting wet.
Yeah.
And you were just rocking out. It was just you were in the moment, in a zone. Is there a song that you guys have written that puts you in that mood?
Well, you mentioned Rio. I mean, Rio was just voted by bass players around the world, you know, as the second greatest bass line of all time. So, you know, now I'm like, oh shit, you know, this is like, you know, this is, you know, I got to get this one right. But it's kind of amazing when you come up with this stuff, you know, when you're like 22, you know, and you kind of set the bar for yourself. And I mean, particularly, I think Girls on Film and Rio are both bass lines that I really need to step up. I cannot dial those bass lines in. You know, they've got to be played, you know, they've got to be played fluidly and deftly. And, you know, and if I'm not feeling it, it's going to be horrible. So, you know, I kind of set myself up from early days. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, to be honest, I mean, most of the songs that, most of the great Duran songs kind of have cool bass lines, you know, and I like where, like we played Reflex last night, you know, and, you know, and I just kind of like where the bass line sits in the sound, you know, and it's not like with that one, I really don't have to do that much. It's the opposite of Rio. But you know, we played when we did the Halloween show, right. We played Shadows on Your Side, which is from the Seven and the Ragged Tiger album. And that was like a difficult album because we were following up Rio, you know, and, I grew really fast as a player. I mean, I didn't start playing bass until I'd met Rog, you know, and very, very quickly we sort of mastered to some degree, we mastered the art of the rhythm section and being tight was our mission, you know, I'm not talking about like, you know, Miles Davis tight. I'm talking about, you know, young English rock musicians, you know? And I think Rio, you know, on that second album, like the Rio, that was like how many notes, you know, that was a lot of notes, you know, and on the third album, you know, it was like, okay, we consciously were like, okay, well, we need to consider the direction, you know, we changed producers and I remember thinking economy. And I remember we're now talking about 84, you know, that like synth lines were starting to come in as well. And like, I was thinking, you know, whereas it was like, how many notes can I play? Not in a progressive rock kind of feel, but just in a sort of like a cool, funky way. Then I was thinking, no, less is more, less is more. But Shadows on Your Side is like so many notes, you know, and playing it last week in rehearsals, I was like, oh, this is really like, this is the follow-up to Rio, this one. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm really, it's like, you know, but you know, it's really fun to play when you're on top of it. Yeah. If you're not feeling, you know, if you, you know, when you're on top of it, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I've worked with a few other bass players. Some are very, very like icons, but I worked with Nikki Six. I did a one-off with him, and someone had told him, well, the guy coming in to fill in is John Taylor's tech. Yeah. And he came in and he introduced himself. And of course, in my head, I'm like, I know who you are, dude, you know, but he said to me, he said, thanks for filling in at the last minute. He goes, I have a question. Is John Taylor as good live as he is on Rio? And I told him he's better.
Thank you.
But anyway, well, thanks, man, because those are, you know, those my favorite bass line of yours, of course, other than Rio, is Union of the Snake.
It's just right.
It's such a groovy tune yeah. for me, man.
Yeah.
What is your proudest moment for this band and personal in your career? Other than
you know the way that we operate, you know, and we don't rest on our laurels.
Yeah.
You know, we you know, I mean, Hyde Park was extraordinary, and that was, you know, 70,000 Brits, you know, and I'm sure there were a few tourists in there, you know, kind of showed up to celebrate Duran Duran-ness, you know, and that was, you know, looking out of that crowd. You know, that felt pretty good.
Love that, like, when you do a show like Hyde Park, like, I'm nervous. I'm, you know, I'm freaking out. Is it going to work? Is it going to go down? Whatever. And
sure.
And then I go back and talk to you, and you're just as nervous.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts, isn't there?
And then I'm like, okay, we're going to get through this.
I mean, you know, I think that we always tend to under-rehearse, you know, and I think that we, you know, we sometimes make the mistake of thinking, well, how long is it going to take us to get tight, you know, and tightness comes pretty quickly to us.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, the onstage sound is so volatile, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get from one day to the next. And to some degree, that's because we don't spend that much time dialing the onstage sound in, you know, and I mean, actually it's developed over time. I mean, the band we were talking about, In-Ear Monitors, recently, you know, because which kind of came along like the late 80s, I think. And, you know, for singers, it was a boon. You know, it's like, I mean, Simon, for him, it changed his life, that he didn't have to sort of like, he didn't have to shut out guitars and, you know, and Andy, you know, our first guitar player, was a loud guitar player. You know, Nick doesn't like loud guitars anyway, so he was really happy too. But me, I struggled, and I think because when we think of, you know, when you're in the bass department, you know, you want this, it's a, you want to be part of a big sound, you know, you want to be, and you want to feel and bottom, it's hard to get that bottom into those little in-ear monitors sometimes, you know. But, you know, we worked at it, and we're getting there, you know, 30 years later. But, you know, just sometimes you, like last night, I mean, the night before last, the sound was fantastic. And I thought, great, we've got it nailed. But last night, it was all over the place. And I couldn't understand why it was so different to the night before. I even forget what the question was now.
I think we were talking about, you know, what was the question? I asked you a question about your proudest moment.
Oh, proudest moment. Yeah, you see, I always avoid that.
We started talking about Hyde Park and shows and nervousness. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when I was 22, 23, and we put out a single, Is This Something I Should Know? And it went straight in at number one. Straight in at number one.
Yeah.
You know, and as a kid, I'd been following the charts like since I was 12. You know, and so I was, I mean, so if I'd, so that kid that I, that teenage kid would have registered that, whoa, that Duran Duran single went straight in at number one. I mean, that was mega, you know what I mean? That was huge. you know, selling out Madison Square Gardens twice in 1984. I mean, the band had been together for like 3 years, you know. So we ticked a lot of boxes very early on.
Yeah.
You know, and then we've been like shoring up. It feels like we went through, Simon, Nick and I particularly went through many, many years where we were just trying to hold the line, you know, because we'd gained so much, we'd achieved so much in the first few years. And then it all started slipping away and we were like trying to scramble to like, never mind one night at the Garden, how about one night at Radio City? Whoa, how about like one night at the Beacon Theatre? Oh my God, have we even sold it out? And you're like, you know, and, yeah. And when does the, you know, when do we, when does it stop, you know? And, you know, we've been lucky that we've had producers like Mark Ronson,
yeah,
that have stepped in and gotten on board with us and, yeah, sort of helped us, you know, get back. You know, Niall has always been a great friend to the band, and he, you know, always having him on our team, you know, has always felt good. Sometimes you've just got to hang in there, man, and it comes around. You know, we came back, we put the original band back together, I think about, what was it, like 15 years ago or something?
2002-ish.
Okay, so yeah, 16 years ago. And, you know, and there were like Lifetime Achievement Awards, you know, and there was some sort of, you know, there was a few. But, you know, I think Lifetime Achievement Awards are like, you know, they're nice, you know, they're like stops along the road, you know. But I mean, you know, I don't exactly know where we're going. I suppose, you know, I mean, I suppose, you know, what's anybody that's in the creative arts, what do they want? Greatness.
Yeah.
You know, and like, how do you get there? Well, you know, one day at a time, you know, and so, you know, and I think when things like the Hall of Fame come along, you know, everybody's a little, well, certainly if you're like Nick or I, you're like, that's not defining us. I remember when I first came out to LA, I always remember this because Jack Nicholson was like the great, biggest star in Hollywood at the time. And I think he'd just done The Departed, or it was around about that time. And he, like Hollywood, hosted this big, big celebratory dinner for him, you know, honoring, you know, his achievements. And he said, the best is yet to come. And it wasn't. He was done.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I mean, I think he made like 3 more movies.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, you just don't want to be defined by anything, you know, other than your own agenda, other than your own restless agenda. But, you know,
if you start believing that, it restricts you.
Yeah. Yeah, it can do. You know, it's almost like you have to be insecure and nervous and fearful for your place, because, you know, once you get complacent, although look at McCartney, for Christ's sake, what a work ethic he's got. Yeah. Look at Jagger and Richards. I mean, they're amazing. I mean, they never stop. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, I mean, you know, those are the guys that I'm looking toward, and that's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, I just want what those guys have got.
Well, you said earlier, like when you released Is There Something I Should Know, went to number one, you were 22, 23, you said, and you were selling out the Garden and you had the world in your hand. Yeah. And then you said there came the years where you were just trying to hold the line. We just sold out the Garden. I say we because I'm
Yeah.
And do you think the band has found that balance now to where I think that radio, FM radio, is, there's so much good music out there. And I think this album, in the time I've been with you, is the best album yet in the time I've spent with you.
Mm.
Do you think FM radio is held back? Like, they're only playing the same 10, 15 songs a day, because there are definitely hits on this album that could achieve what is Something I Should Know did.
Yeah.
But radio's just not going to.
No. I mean, hit songs almost exclusively are sung by people under 30.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pop music.
Yeah.
You know, I've let that go. You know, I'm not, I have no expectations. the best thing that an artist like Duran could hope for is like what happened with Kate Bush, you know, and you get a placement in something like Stranger Things,
yeah,
and it turns into a phenomena, you know, and for a few weeks,
yeah,
you find yourself top of the downloads, you know, yeah, because it's suddenly a song of yours is being exposed to you know, to a demographic that isn't really aware of you. But I think that, I mean, culture has moved on to a place now where there is a lot, there's many, many people that want to, you know, celebrate the 80s, that want to celebrate the spirit of the 80s. You know, for a long, long time, it was all about the 70s, the 60s, 70s, 60s, 70s, you know, and now, you know, like audiences are coming to, you know, when they come to a Duran show, yeah, they're going to see Duran Duran, they're going to hear the Duran Duran songs, but they're also going to be a part of the spirit of Duran Duran, which is a very particular, you know, we're of our time,
yeah,
you know, there's like that trans, slightly transgender, slightly fluid kind of metrosexual thing. There's the fashion element, there's the art element. It's groovy, but it rocks, you know, it's all those things. When, you know, the beginning of the 80s, you know, was like, it was quite an interesting time, really, because, you know, the 70s was, if you weren't there, I mean, it was an extraordinary time, really, because, you know, it kind of began with the end of the Beatles, and we had Pink Floyd, and we had Led Zeppelin, we had, you know, and then we had the Sex Pistols and the Clash, and just this extraordinary range of music. And by the end of that decade, you know, music was just like, we had Donna Summer and we had Kraftwerk and we had, you know, disco music. And there was a lot of like interesting things going on. Music of the early 80s, I find quite interesting. It's very locked in and it's kind of sexy. There's there's a lot of music from that time, but that is cool. Prince exemplifies it, really. But, you know, you're getting that when you come to a Duran show, you know, you're kind of, you know, you're just celebrating that kind of that era, if you like. And I think that's why we've kind of stabilized, you know, and if anything, you know, it's kind of growing. The live business is growing again now. I think also because we've worked a lot of festivals, and when we did the reunion, you know, we'd never played a festival in our lives, you know, because in the 80s nobody went to festivals, you know, but like it started again with grunge, and you know, and it became huge, you know, Coachella, yeah, and Glastonbury and whatnot. And so, you know, one of the things about, you know, getting the band up and running again was like, we need to look at this business. How do we kind of, you know, how do we, where, is there a place for us,
yeah,
at Coachella or Glastonbury or ACL? And so that's been, first of all, it's been interesting to figure out how to present our music in that way. But also then, you know, you're exposing your music, you're exposing the band to all sorts of people that would not come to see us play if we were playing at the local arena or you know, so I think that's been good too.
Right on.
Yeah.
Moving on from music, during the, when the world changed and everything shut down and people started learning how to make bread at home, you took up painting.
Yeah.
Is that something you always did, or was that something you just started? I had a friend who started it right around the same time. I had friends who started woodworking, like I said, making bread. But you did this
making
thing.
Wooden bread.
Wooden bread, yeah. you started painting, and you were actually really good. Had you always painted, or is that just something that you?
Yeah. I had actually. I mean, you know, I was that kid that was always drawing, and mm-hmm. I loved drawing, and I did try oil painting for a while, and I went to art school. It's actually where Duran played its first gig, was my art school. But you know, at the point of which I'm kind of at art school, I'm like, I think I want to be a musician, you know, so I dumped all of that. And I think I kept the certain sensibilities I take with me, you know, mm-hmm. I've definitely got quite a good I've got quite a good visual sense, you know, and I'm quite good with graphics and design. I'd started painting and drawing again just before, like a year before lockdown, but just like not really seriously, but just kind of found that I kind of enjoyed it. And actually one of the last runs of shows that we did before lockdown, I found myself like going to a local art supply store when we were in San Francisco for a few days and actually spending my day off just doing that and thinking, wow, you know what? This is something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And I think we were about couple of months into lockdown and I just suddenly just started doing it. And it was so visceral and sort of sensual. And I was like, and I was just getting into the paint and it was so expressionist, you know, and I would just like attack. I started actually, strangely enough, in lockdown, the house next door to us had a whole building project going on. And these guys were showing up every day, maskless and drilling and building and whatnot. But there was all the outside, there was like a dumpster filled with wood and whatnot. And I would go and get pieces of wood from that, file down the edges and paint on that. That was my first, I didn't actually think, well, maybe you need to order some canvases. I wasn't thinking like that. I didn't think that I was quite there yet. I was really just using what was around. And I just really, I really loved it. And I sort of built this cave for myself. And, you know, and I filled it with these things that I was doing. And some of them were like sculptural. Some of them were just like drift. It was like driftwood almost, you know. And it was, I think, one of, you know, with the work that I do with the band, you know, that which is amazing and creative, but, you know, it's entirely collaborative. And, you know, you've seen us. Every decision has to be signed off on by everybody, you know. So never more than when you're in the studio and there's 100 decisions to be made throughout the course of a day about the level of a sound or the tempo or the, you know, or whether it should be a kick or what the sound of the kick should be or what that lyric should, you know. I mean, there are so many decisions and most of the time everybody's got an opinion. And I mean, sometimes you really have to just like sit on your hands, you know, and let the process, you know, it's, oh. So this was just like, you mean I don't have to ask anybody if I can use green? It's like, no, you don't use it. Use as much as you like. And it was like audacious, you know? And yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I was so, you know, I'm so privileged, you know, and I didn't have to worry, you know, I didn't have to mask up and take a bus into work, you know, that I was able to just stay home, yeah. You know, and I had the time, that I was able to kind of indulge myself, really.
Yeah.
I feel very fortunate to have gotten to do that. And it was, you know, I actually don't know whether I could ever find that kind of groove again with it, to be honest, because there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
The phone wasn't ringing. There was no emails. Nobody was visiting. It was like all day you had, you know, and that's what I got to do. So, you know, it was, yeah, I got to make the most of it.
Right on. Are there plans to write another book?
Well, I thought, again, actually, in lockdown, you know, I talked with the guys that I did the last book with, and they were quite keen to do another one. And, but we just couldn't quite land on the subject, you know, what the angle was. And, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what, I don't know quite what it would be, you know?
Yeah.
They wanted to make it all about Rio because there was the anniversary of Rio was coming up. And I was like, you know, I mean, I talk about the band all the time. I mean, if there was something else that I could dig into, maybe that I could give more of it, you know, a sort of unique take on then maybe. But you know, it's not something that I'm like fretting over.
Yeah. Man, we just did a Halloween show.
Mm.
Amazing set list.
Yeah.
Just perusing my social media, I'd seen fans that said that was the best show they've seen since 84.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you saw or read any of that, but how does that make you feel that these lifelong fans are saying that was the best show?
Well.
And how did you guys come up with that set list?
Well, firstly, yeah, I get it, because we haven't put that much energy into a single show probably ever. And, you know, we were coming out for the Hall of Fame, so we booked the show on the 31st, and Nick's like, oh, that's Halloween. We've got to do something special for Halloween. And, you know, and it started with the songs. And we were just like, you know, we'd come off stage on the arena tour and we'd be throwing songs around. I think he had, I mean, Nick put forward most of the songs actually, because he has a Halloween playlist that he uses, that he plays every year. So, you know, we just had to...
He had been training for this all his life.
I think so, yeah. So we just had to sort of cherry pick which ones felt like we could do, you know, that we could do right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at the end, after the Hollywood Bowl shows, you know, those guys went back to London. I was here. You know, I went into the studio and sort of laid down some backing tracks for a couple of the songs, and they were in London. They did a couple of backing tracks, and we kind of flipped them over and just built them up really quickly. I mean, we'd done 5 years was something that we did when we were on lockdown.
Yeah,
and it was really one of the first recordings that we've made. And I can only say, you know, because I was over here, you know, so we did it. It was all kind of done remotely in a way. You know, I think with that one, like Mike. We put down some drums. Mike Garson played to it. Got sent to me. I played a bass. It went back. Simon did the vocals. And, you know, and it was it turned out great. So we sort of took that same approach with these songs, and now we're talking about actually putting something out, possibly for next Halloween. You know, an album out. I mean, also getting to pick. Older, less rarely played Duran songs, mm-hmm. Such as Night Boat or Shadows on Your Side, that just sort of, you know, fit into the overall mood of the thing. So, I mean, it was fantastic, really, because, you know, everybody would have been together last week, essentially to sort of rehearse for those shows, which really, really existed to sort of warm the band up for the Hall of Fame this weekend. Mm-hmm. So, but instead of just going over the same stuff, the stuff we'd been playing, you know, on tour, we had to focus on a whole completely different set of songs.
Yeah.
And actually it was quite good because, I mean, I had to play my ass off and I had to practice so much to get those. So I could roll up on day one, you know, and just know everything, because I kind of feel like the bass and drums are like, you know, they're the bricks. We're like the first and second brick in the wall.
Yeah.
It's like if Roger and I are sort of learning our parts, it's a mess for everybody, you know. And I feel like the least we can do is show up and we've got it down. And then, you know, Dom has to work it out, and Simon's got to work it out with it. But like, I feel it behooves me to show up and know exactly what I'm doing. So, you know, that meant that I had a lot of practice time before it. But it was good, though, you know.
Yeah.
And probably got me playing way more than if we'd have just been doing the same songs.
We've done rehearsals with you guys before. We know, we kind of have an idea of how they go, but you guys really put in the work. I was really happy. It was fun watching you guys put it all together.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that the show was going to be aesthetic as it was. Is that something you guys plan on doing, making it an annual thing?
Well, you know, Nick just, you know, once he got rolling with it, you know, there's no stopping him. He says just, you know, he just like it. I mean, You know, when he gets, when he's obsessed with something, you know, he, I mean, I think there was the projections, you know, there was the screen content,
yeah,
you know, which he'd done with Vince and which we've got, I mean, has been really strong this year. You know, we've got a real groove going,
yeah.
You know, and I think there's a sort of an aesthetic which really works now, mm-hmm. You know, which the two of them have got an understanding. They in turn understand what the Duran presentation needs to be. But then on top of that, there was all that, you know, all that crap that was on the stage, you know, and then there was all the, and then it was like, I mean, oh my God, you know, I mean, in the run up to the, you know, and of course there's always something, you know, and then it was, you know, Simon decided he wanted to go as a bride, you know, and, yeah. And like, we're all like, I mean, the first thing I said to him was like, yeah, just for the one song though, right? He's like, no, I want it on throughout. and I mean, you'd have to be a fly on the wall to some of those conversations. But, you know, we got there in the end, you know, at least we're doing something different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, you know, not resting on our laurels.
I know we were told when we were doing the Halloween show, they said it's just going to be the core crew is going to be a very stripped down rock and roll show.
Yeah.
And then once everything was set up, we looked up.
Well,
like, very stripped.
Then maybe the mistake was using those words, stripped down rock and roll show, to Nick,
yeah.
Which was like, right. You know, but you know, he loves the Halloween thing, you know, and it was like, and he was really like passionate about it. I mean, it was like, I live in America, you know, so we've done a few Halloweens, you know, yeah. But for him, it was like, wow, I'm going to be in Vegas for Halloween. We have to have have this party.
He showed up at noon and was there right? All day helping.
I mean, like, never. Never in 20 years has that happened.
Yeah, it was great. It was great watching him like, no, I don't want it there. I want it here. And then seeing it work. He had a vision.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came in and you know, in the end, it looked amazing. Yeah. The song, you know, you guys, everyone dressed up. Everyone participated.
Right.
You know. What about next year, man? Are we touring next year?
Let's hope so. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's we're just going, it's all about the numbers right now. We've got a run of shows in the UK that I hope is going to include some European capitals. That's sort of late spring. We're looking at another run through the States, going to a lot of the towns, cities that we didn't go to on this run. Mm-hmm. That's going to be around about the same time, sort of August.
Yeah.
You know, we're always game for the European festival market. You know, that's like, what do you got? You know, who's interested in bringing the band to you never quite know. You know, you kind of like put yourself out there and say, we'd be interested. And then you kind of see what's out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been talk about Australia, but I don't think that'll be until very late in the year, Australia and New Zealand. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at, you know, 4 months or so next year.
Right on. Well, I appreciate your time, man.
I
know when
your
I
time.
Told you I was going to start this a couple of years ago, I said, you should do it. And you said, get a couple of episodes. Get a couple of episodes in your belt, kid. But, man, I just want to say I've been with you for 12 years. Thank you so much for bringing me along for the ride. I love working for you. You know, like, I'm always here when you call. Yeah. Congratulations on your Hall of Fame. If my name happens to slip out in your induction speech, you know, that'd be cool too.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible but unlikely. But you know, I love you, Bernie. You know, I love you. And I'm so glad that we take this journey together.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I like I said, people always ask me, you know, like when I turn down gigs or like, and I always say, well, you stick with the devil, you know, and in this case, the devil's a really nice guy. So
I like that.
Man, congratulations on everything. I mean, this album this year, we had a lot of fun this year. Mm. I got one more question. Mm. My podcast is called Is Breakfast Included? And if it was, what would you have?
Oh man, breakfast is my favorite meal of the day. You know, I can't function without breakfast.
Yeah.
And there are breakfasts on gig days and there are breakfasts not on gig days. Yeah. And they're quite different. After a big show, I tend to think, what can I have, let's see, I like bagels.
Yeah.
And I like, bacon and, I like, Greek yogurt. And already we've got ourselves quite a spread.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be some eggs in there.
Yeah.
Choosing breakfast is a tough choice for me. I like all sorts of breakfast goods. I particularly like the term breakfast meats.
I just had breakfast for lunch.
Oh, today. Yeah. Well, that's called brunch, buddy.
Brunch.
Yeah.
But it's brunch on a Thursday?
No, I think you can have brunch any day of the week.
Okay.
It's just breakfast.
I mean, is it? I thought brunch was like breakfast, a weekend thing.
It's like breakfast between 11 and 1:30.
Yeah. Yeah. I can eat
I love
brunch.
I mean, I can't do lunch until I've had breakfast. I don't know about you. I just can't move past it. It's like it's like putting on your socks before your shoes.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And then I can't have dinner until I've had lunch.
I mean, if I've had breakfast and lunch, I almost don't need dinner.
Right on. Well, John, thank you so much.
Thanks.
When this comes out, you'll already be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Ka-ching.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Play the fucking bass, John Taylor. Pretty cool, huh? John is an amazing person. He's a great guy. I couldn't pick a better person to work for, and I've stuck with him all this time. Although I think he's stuck with me all this time, which is quite flattering. I really appreciate him taking the time to do this. Don't forget, tomorrow night, November 19th, HBO Max, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Class of 22 induction featuring Duran Duran, Dolly Parton, Eminem, Lionel Richie, The Eurythmics, Judas Priest, and Pat Benatar. Don't miss it. And if you don't have HBO Max, go out and get it right now. I think you get like a free week or something if you sign up. Don't tell them I said so. All right, guys, I am done. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.